Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the 16mm Film Crew. I'm Cindy.
And I'm Dale.
You can watch us on YouTube. You can like and comment on our YouTube videos and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can listen to us everywhere podcasts are found at 16mm Film Crew Podcast. Leave us a rate and review. And visit us on our website at www.16mmfilmcrew.com. This week, we watched Civil War, directed by Alex Garland. A team of journalists travel across the United States during a rapidly escalating second American Civil War, which has engulfed the nation. This movie stars Kirsten Dunst, Wagner Moura, Kaylee Spaney, Stephen McKinley Henderson, Sonoya Mitsuno, and Nick Offerman. So, Dale, take it away.
Like, there is, like, so much, like, potential for, like, a good movie hidden in this. To me, like, I did not really enjoy it that much. Like, the visual spectacle of it was amazing. Typical Alex Garland fare. But I felt like I was eating, like, a rice cake for weight loss. It was, like, really empty calories. Like, the movie for me lacked a lot of substance and polish. It's, like, basically a cursory version of a person trying to understand the American political spectrum and American history at the same time. And it's kind of, I view it the same way, because Alex Garland is from the UK, he's British. I kind of view it the same way how we have a fascination with the royal family stuff, that how, you know, we absorb Americans because we have no reference for it, we absorb that. I kind of feel like political dissent and strife and issues in America, that's how British people absorb it the same way. Foreigners in general. And I felt like his excuse, and people were questioning how the idea of, you know, California, Texas, you know, were joining forces in this. He kind of really gave like, the way he described it was like, oh, you know, the president is so bad, you know, he does something so terrible that it forces these two states to come together. And of course, you have the regular southern states doing their South Rise Again shit, but they don't really matter. And I felt like his explanation for that was very much lip service, and he tried to grasp at something that wasn't there in his story. Like, it wasn't a part of his story. And, like, I described this movie as Mark from Rent. Like, in Rent, Mark is, like, literally an observer. Like, he's not an active participant in the movie at all. Like, but his thoughts are driven, like, how idealistic and intrinsic he is. And I kind of tie that into Kirsten Dunst's character, which I think she had an amazing performance. You know, in the beginning when she's talking to the older man, she's like, yo, all these countries I toured doing war photos, I never thought I'd be here. I thought my art, you know, was a cautionary tale and stuff like that. And the worst part is this being the backdrop of journalists observing and experiencing war and not really being active participants in it, and either, like, which side they agree on or whatever. It's sad because we see what's going on in the Middle East right now, with Palestinian journalists are being slain left and right, you know, just trying to get the story out of their people. Whereas in contrast, you see Kirsten Dunst and her team, they're just hunting for the money shot, which is the president. And it, of course, it loosely references stuff. And I feel like it kind of gives the hints to Alex Garland's political views. Like, there are a lot of centrist topics when they found the other city in Virginia. And they were like, oh, kind of feel bad for what's happening outside our city kind of thing, but we don't want to get involved. Or, you know, loosely referencing Antifa's rebellion in a negative light, which is funny because his president's supposed to be a dictator, which kind of aligns itself with fascism. And Antifa basically means anti-fascist. So, where are you going with that, Alex Garland? I feel like there was so much more this movie could have been, and it was like a Cliff Notes version of what it could be. And I feel like he wrote this in the era of Trump. It's very obvious. And like I said, because it doesn't have a proper grasp on the American political spectrum, and also this is coming from a very white liberal viewpoint, he cannot execute the thoughts this movie is supposed to invoke properly. You know, it's supposed to be his version of, you know, Apocalypse Now or Full Metal Jacket, but it doesn't hit those political points or actually has a message like those movies do. And that's the biggest drawback from this picture.
So I actually like this film. I thought that the idea to focus it on photojournalists who are not, who are supposed to be objective people, like, you know, you're taking the photos, you're not actually writing the headlines or the articles, you're not creating a story, you're just shooting what the truth is of the situation. And then other people can frame it how they want to, but like, the facts are this happened at this place at this time. And that's what the, I think it made sense to have them be the focus of this movie, just because it's like, that way you don't have to necessarily have a position. The audience can decide how they feel about it. And on one hand, I really like that because I just feel like, you know, you're not like spoon feeding an agenda to anyone. But on the other hand, I also feel like this movie is weirdly heavy handed in terms of like some of the themes that it's trying to communicate. Like war is bad, and I think that's not a controversial thing to say. Like war is very damaging. And I think by just kind of shooting it and kind of seeing the different elements, you have some places where people are just vigilantes and like taking things into their own hands and doing absolute madness. And then you have like a refugee camp, like just in the middle of the city. And then you have entire towns that seem completely unaffected by what's happening because they're just choosing not to get involved and trying to be neutral. So I think you can kind of see what war can do on every side of it. Like you see the people who suffer and then you also see the people who are profiting off of it. So like from that end, I think that was a good, because it, at least you don't have to in some ways like give your opinion on like what your personal politics are. And I feel like in a way you still do, like, I don't know, there's no way you can be completely neutral on these things. I don't feel like there is. I feel like you're always taking a position, even if you're trying not to. So like, and also I feel like it will kind of affirm whoever's position, whatever someone's position is. So if someone is very like anti-establishment, doesn't trust the government, maybe they can watch this movie and take some things from that and say, okay, well, that coincides with what I believe. Or if you believe that government does have a role in people's lives, it can make people's lives better, then you might get something from that, because it's a more of a cautionary tale if you're looking at it in that way. So in a way, I think it's good because it's like, you can kind of take and project whatever you need from it. But I do feel like, to your point, you're not like getting a solid position. And I feel like if that's what you wanted from the movie, you're not going to get it. And then that's going to impede on your viewing experience. So I guess you kind of have to know like what it is before you go in there. If you're expecting it to be one thing, it probably won't be that. So it's like, it just depends on like, do you care if the movie has a direct message or not? I guess that's the thing. Because of what it seems to me, because even when I was listening to his interview at South by Southwest, it was very much of like, I'm not taking a position, you can decide how you feel about it. So, fine. Feel however, I guess it's like, take whatever you want, feel however you want about it. And I think that if you have conflicting feelings about it, that's also a good thing. So, yeah, that was my first point. I also think that in terms of like the heavy-handedness, like, or maybe it's not heavy-handed, maybe it's just, I guess, a little meta. I don't know. It's interesting that like, if you watched Priscilla, Kaylee Spaney worked with Sofia Coppola. Obviously, Kirsten Dunst has been Sofia Coppola's like longtime collaborator. And having those two be kind of like our guiding lights through this, where it's like, you know that this young person is going to take over this established, you know, photojournalist's position at some point, and then kind of having that be the thing. It was a little cheesy, but like, but I also liked it because I liked knowing like, okay, these people have an association outside of the movie. So I guess that kind of fed into whatever dynamic they had in the film. Also, I think all the performances were absolutely great. I thought everyone did an amazing job in terms of bringing these characters to life. I was like, I don't want anyone to die. I know someone's dying, but like, yikes. So I was very invested in the characters, and I thought that that was a good grounding spot. And especially Kirsten Dunst's character of Lee, I liked that, like, she was very kind of desensitized to all of the violence that she had witnessed over her career. But at a certain point, when a young person is now involved in what she's doing and is like basically a mini her, she has to reflect. I feel like it's a reflection, and it's an uncomfortable reflection of like, oh, I guess I didn't realize how much risk I was taking. I didn't realize how dangerous situations were. And I don't want someone else to be put in that position. And that makes her, especially towards the end, kind of fall apart a little bit, because it's like, whoa, this is really bad. And the people I care about are actually dying. So I like that she had that moment of realization, and that you can see the impact of what this kind of job would do to somebody. Like, I don't feel like you can completely be shut off from these type of things. Like, I feel like at some point, I don't know, it's gonna hit the wall, and you're gonna be like, okay, well, this is real.
I mean, I do feel the same way in regards to her performance. I mean, but I also it's kind of a weird switch, because it happens like really abruptly. Like, well, you see the movie where she's like, where she's talking with what's his face, Stephen McKinney, Sammy. Mm-hmm. And she's like has a very nihilistic point of view due to her experience of going to other countries and witnessing war. But then it's like, I can understand as a person the slow progression of, okay, cool, I meet the girl, then, oh, we're on this journey. Hey, we're taking shots from like a random golf course. I'm just going to lie down on the grass and chill. I thought that was odd. And then going now, oh, we're going to, the girl left. We got to get her. And then, oh, I just saw Sammy die and other people die, and it shows a breakdown there. Like, those two points kind of should have been the breaking point. And especially the part where they're like, her and Joel are like, oh, we're journalists, nothing bad's gonna happen to us. Like, and it is odd. It's like, it's real Scooby-Doo shit where you have the one black guy saying, y'all's dumb as hell, they will shoot you, they don't care. And typical white person fans are like, no, it's okay, we're gonna go and we'll be fine. And but then you finally see the breakdown when she's about to get her money shot of potentially getting the president, and it has like a weird inversion of her and Jesse's characters in a way, like your past, the passion torch moment you're kind of mentioning. But like those last couple sequences are really, really haphazardly, I guess, in a way, to me, of showing her progression. It just snaps instantaneously almost to a breakdown. You don't see the slow wear and tear of her reaching that breaking point. It just goes to like, oh, we're marching through DC and they're launching rockets or whatever, and now I have my breakdown. That to me was kind of a little bit jarring and rough. Like, I do think Alex Arnold could have took his time and probably finessed it a little bit more, so we actually saw her gradually get to that point a little more, instead of right near you're at the goal line where she suddenly has her own personal breakdown.
Someone else said that too, and I don't think that's true. I feel like in the beginning of the movie, when she's in the hotel taking a bath, she's having all of those flashbacks of being at war. Mm-hmm. And then there's another moment where they're in the dress shop and she tries on the dress and she's like, wow, I haven't seen myself in such a long time. I feel like there are little moments that aren't like explicitly like, this is a really serious thing and this should cause you to have a breakdown, like cause and effect. Like, if this happens and you react that way, I feel like it was a slow build. Like, once we got to DC and we were outside of the White House and she has that moment where it's like all starting to fall in on her, I believed it, because I was like, I can see from back then when you were in New York, like, I can already tell, like, this is not working out for you. Like, you're starting to feel the effects. And I think maybe it's more so like because it's your home, like you're it's in the US. You probably never thought that this type of thing would happen here. And also because, like, you have a young person who you're now kind of in charge of looking out for. So all of that stuff is starting to pick at you, unwind you. It's like, I believe the switch when it happened. Now, other people probably are going to read it differently, but like from the signs that I was seeing in the film, I was like, yeah, I can totally understand like how she would get to a point where even in the last moment, she would sort of sacrifice herself for someone else, which I don't think she probably would have done before.
Yeah.
So
I don't know, it's kind of odd for me with this movie, because like I said, they spend a lot of time as observers for the most part, particularly when, and you see that disconnect the most is when they're getting hit by sniper fire and Joel's asking those, the sniper and his spotter, oh, who are you with? You know, what's going on? Who are you taking orders from? He's in journalist mode, not realizing I'm getting shot at. We're getting shot at. My focus should be on survival, which those soldiers say. They're basically like, orders don't matter. This dude is shooting at me. I don't know who it is. My whole function is survival. And I felt like the disconnect in that situation throughout this whole movie was really, really weird. And like, I understand, like, Alex Garland was like, oh, this movie's a cautionary tale of X, Y, and Z. But when you have the people involved not really acknowledging those cautionary issues or problems, it's kind of weird. I really think this movie probably would have been a lot better had they focused in on, like, the civilians and their experiences with this. Because for the most part, Joel and Lee, the two of them, and of course Sammy and Jesse, the four of them, really have no issue progressing across the country. It only really happens when they hit, well, the whole movie is shot in Atlanta, but whatever, when they hit Cartersville, which I find apropos that the big set piece city where they have to reach is the site of the far right rally in 2017. You know, that really hits the nail on the head. He was just being really topical with writing this movie. I think like the moment where you see Jesse Plemons, Kirsten Dunst's husband, show up as a soldier and they're killing civilians indiscriminately and they're burying them, you know, about to burn their grave, and it hits the point where they're like, oh, we're Americans. And his question is, what kind of Americans are you? And you can kind of see that subtle racism within that dialogue when they're talking to Joel, who is played by Wagner Moore, and they're like, Central American or South American? And you see the process in Joel, like, what are you talking about? And then it hits him like, oh, I'm from Florida. And then he goes on, where are you from? Missouri. Where are you from? Colorado. Like, that's what I'm talking about. Y'all's Americans. And then he goes to the two people from Hong Kong and he shoots them. Like, it really hits on like the subtle racism of that environment situation at that time. And I think that moment kind of went over a lot of people's heads in watching that scene as well.
That was the most terrifying scene of the entire movie. And I would argue the best. Yeah. Like, first of all, Jesse Plemons, like, I believe it. Like, he's obviously, I don't know where his political standings are, but I'm going to assume that he's probably liberal. But like the way he portrayed that was absolutely terrifying. That whole sequence was just really, really good in terms of like direction and performances. Because when it first starts, it's like, okay, well, what are these goons doing? And then also because, and I will say this is one of the criticisms I have of this movie, they don't really make it clear like who is fighting who. Yeah. Like, you have the California and Texas thing, but you also have a Southern rebellion, and then you have the states that are kind of neutral, but like they don't really explain like who is who and like how can we differentiate between any of these groups, because most of them are like in military gear. So it's like, how do I know who these people are? So he should have did a better job at explaining that. But anyways, in terms of this scene, I was like, okay, so what are they doing? Like, I guess, are they a part of the army? Like, who are they? The rebellion? They're just some dudes. Like, they're just some dudes. They're just some straight up racist dudes who are just killing people who they don't feel belong to this country. And that whole scene was like crazy because, you know, we meet those two other people maybe 2 minutes before the scene happens. And yet I felt like so scared for them. Like I was already like invested in like, oh God, what's going to happen to them? And it starts off very quiet, like when he's asking the questions about like, where are you from and all of those things. And then it gets so loud, like once they kill the other friend, and then Jesse starts screaming and everyone just starts like absolutely losing their mind because they're like, okay, well, we're all going to die here. Like, and I was like, all you're about to die here. Like, wow, this is crazy. And then Steven comes in with the car and just runs them over. But like that whole scene, then Jesse falling into the pit of the dead bodies. And oh God, that was just so disturbing. And them just like screaming, but it's completely silent in the car. All of that was really good to me. I was like that, all of that provoked a lot of emotion. And I felt like that is probably the most cautionary thing of like how when you're sowing in so much division, that's where it leads. It leads to people just taking things upon, like taking things into their own hands and then just killing people indiscriminately. And it's like, and a lot of times it's based on their own prejudice. And I feel like when you continue to reward those type of voices and include those type of voices, like that's what happens. Like they just feel like they can just kill, shoot people, end their life, and that's over. And that was such a central part of this entire movie. And to me, the most impactful part, because I was like, okay. Because it wasn't about the president or anything like that. That really made me feel in type of way because we didn't really spend any time with him. And I'm like, if you're a president for a third term, like how did you even maneuver that? Like, yeah, maybe your time is up. Like, but in terms of just like the intimate moments of these characters, like having this new little family and then having that family completely broken up, and how do you move forward and how do you continue to tell the story? It's like, that was really good. Yeah. So.
And that's a part of the movie. And oh, to one thing, it's not lost to me that it's a black person that saves the four of those idiots, you know, because for decades, black people, honestly, because we've faced the most discriminatory actions other than probably Native Americans, so that we've been basically constantly been a canary in a coal mine whenever these issues pop up. And he was like, hey, slow down, let the car pass you. Career's it's like, nah, I'm a fucker on my friends. You know, then they say, hey, we got to go rescue them. And all the chaos, he's like, no, it's not safe. Like, for centuries, whenever these issues come up, black people have usually always been the canary in the coal mine, warning people, this will happen if y'all don't stop. And we're usually always ignored until it was too late, you know, which happened with Agent Orange. You know, everybody was like, don't vote for him. All those issues happen. And they're like, oh, and now we're about to repeat the same mistake again. But but that black scene,
would for him too, so I'm side-eyeing y'all a little bit.
Yeah. But that scene is also why I do think the film would have hit so much harder had they focused on the civilian interactions. Had they focused on the people who were actually affected by what's going on. Not the, you know, this, you know, what's the word? What's the movie I want to reference with this? Little Miss Sunshine family journey, you know, to the White House to get this money shot. Had the movie grounded itself on focusing on the experiences of people, it would have been 100 times better.
I think one of the things is that like this is an A24 film, right? So but this is like the first like really big budget A24 film that I think they've made. And it's a question of like, yeah, it was like $50 million in terms of the budget, I think. So and it's a question of like, how do you bridge kind of what you're known for, which is like the indie character study, like intimate depictions of people with a big budget kind of spectacle thing? Like, can you actually make the transition to do it, or can you like juggle both? And I think that's what Civil War really was. It was like a question of like, okay, can A24 do something like this? And I guess the jury's still out. I mean, people have very, very varying opinions about this. Like, even when I was looking at the reviews and stuff, people are very like divided about like how they feel about this movie. Like people, some people really don't like it and some people really like it. So I guess we don't know. I guess they'll have to try again with another film so we can actually figure that out. To me, I felt like it did a decent job of trying to balance the two things. But I also feel like maybe, but I do feel like there were a lot of things that could have been done better. I feel like in terms of the dialogue and the like what people were saying, I didn't feel like it was tight at all. Like I felt like the dialogue needed some extra work. Like there was a line where Kirsten Dunst is talking to Steven and she's like, "You're old and slow." And it's like, okay, girl, you already said that. And also we have eyes. Like we understand the situation here. It was a very weird line. I was just like, why did they put that in here? And it was giving very like first draft. Like we haven't finished yet, but we were told that we had to turn it in. Like that's what it was giving. So it's weird because it's like, Alex, like, you know how to make good movies. So like, what's going on here? That's my problem with him. I feel like he really just decides whether he wants to put effort in. I feel like he might have said that he didn't want to make movies anymore. I don't know if that was him or if that was someone else, but I think that's what I heard. And maybe you just need a break, friend. Like maybe you just need to take a breather because especially men, awful. So like Annihilation, it was kind of there. There were some moments where you're just like, So I feel like you know how to do a good movie and there's some stuff that you still need to, work out. But I think in this one, he at least tried to do something that was big budget in terms of like what you're seeing, but also trying to focus on like these four like core group of people and their experience. But you're also taking the position of being observers. So it's not like you can get too deep into their lives necessarily because you're trying to set it up. You're trying to set it up in a way where it's like, what we're seeing is just like what the effects of this war is and not like how it's necessarily affecting people. So he has some work to do in terms of like tying those threads together. And then I guess A24 just needs maybe like a different director, you know, like a Robert Eggers or someone like that. I don't know if the next movie he's doing is with A24. I'm not sure. I think he did the Northman with another distribution company. So it probably isn't. But like someone who can work on that scale kind of, but it's still focusing on like intimate character setting. So it's like it's a tough balancing act, I think.
And I think, and you hit like you mentioned Annihilation, I think what Annihilation was, it was based on a book. So he didn't have to do a lot of heavy lifting as a writer. But you see Annihilation and Men, not Annihilation, but you see between Civil War and Men, when he has to do the heavy lifting of writer and director, he kind of slacks off. More so on the writing side.
He wrote Ex Machina, and that's a great movie.
That's what
and
I'm saying. Like,
I don't know if you've seen that.
He wrote what? Sorry, I had to cough.
The Beach?
Yes. But like, and I realized with Ex Machina, what he was also saying is much like in this movie, where he kind of leaves it open-ended for you to decide. At least with Ex Machina, he also gives you two directions. He gives you both viewpoints of what's happening. Mm-hmm. In this movie, he doesn't really give a viewpoint. He doesn't really say anything.
Right.
And that's my issue. At Ex Machina, he gave you the pros of, you know, AI revolution and stuff like that. You know, what is considered human life, blah, blah, blah. You know, the robot actually wanting self-determination, all those things are in there. So you get all different viewpoints and you come to your own. With this movie though, there really is for him to say it's a movie is a cautionary tale with a message, you don't get a viewpoint to say, all right, what's the message I need to reach? It doesn't really go in a direction for you to try and do that. You know, that's my issue with the movie. It's clear he can do it, but he really just dropped the ball with it. And I probably think it was also a very rushed production. You know, just came off Men, probably was writing this for a while, you know, post-Trump era. And then the idea of, oh, we want Miss to release in the States around the time of the Civil, the Confederate anniversary or whatever, you know, on July, April 9th, around that kind of time span. So it is what it is. Hopefully, you know, he's reuniting with Danny Boyle for 28 years later. Hopefully that goes better. Like, hopefully he can focus on the writing portion and Danny can do the directing and that'll work out well. But this movie, like, it wasn't up to what I expect from Alex Garland at all. And that's two movies back to back where he left me feeling that way.
I feel like, I will say that, like, the end, like the very, very end of it, where I think they're going to credits and there's a photo of the soldiers taking the picture with the dead president corpse kind of laying there. That really reminded me of the photos that came out of Guantanamo Bay with the soldiers who were like having the, you know, the inmates on leashes and stuff and smiling at the camera. To me, that was like what shook me, and that shook me in terms of like, oh, I couldn't believe that people would do something like that, but shook me in terms of like, that's what happens. Like, that's what happens when you feel like you are justified in your cause and you can kind of just do anything to anyone. Like, it's that.
Yeah.
Or whatever values that you're trying to fight for lead you to that place. And like, we're already seeing it. We've already seen it during the war on terror. We're seeing it now with the war in Gaza. Like, that's kind of obvious to us, but I feel like to me, that probably, for me, that was the message of just like, that's where this leads. It leads to you like completely being so dehumanized from like, or so desensitized, sorry, from human life that you just don't care. And you can kind of just, and it almost feels like a point of pride for you to like treat people that way, even people who you feel deserve it. And it was just like a reminder to me, like, okay, well, this is why war is terrible, because it not only damages entire communities and people's lives, but it also like takes away your humanity. Mm-hmm. So that's what I got from it. Now, is everyone gonna get that message? Probably not. They might have a different message that they got from this film, but that's what I took from it. I was like, okay, that's what I don't know if that's what he was trying to say, but mm-hmm. that's what I received. So, and again, this movie could have been something else, but it was, I think I see what he was trying to do. I guess that's where I'm at. I'm like, I see what you were trying to do. And I liked some of it, but it definitely needs work. If I was a teacher, that would be on his paper. Yeah, like,
that's
it needs work.
Good for, back. Like, you remember when, like, we would do, I don't know if when you had Cheddar's class when we were at Oakwood, or even though we were at two different times, where you'd write a script, he would say, it's good, do better. Or, like, it's kind of like that. Like, the script is good.
Yeah.
Polish it up and do better. That kind of thing. The movie's not all bad. I love the cinematography from Rob Hardy. You know, they're big collaborators. I loved it. The only thing that stood out for me is like by now everybody's used to being Atlanta being a substitute for New York in films, but I feel like this movie just got really lazy with it. Like, I see the GSU sign in the background of one of the shots. I see like Big Bethel AME. You know, if you're from Atlanta, you see the Jesus Saves steeple. Like, that's one of the shots blatantly. I was like, they kind of didn't really put much effort into disguising this city to look like New York at all. They're just like, I don't care, nobody's in there. Like, I see Emory's sign, like, clearly that's Emory's hospital sign right there in the background. Like, y'all can do better, so much better. You know, like, the only one that can kind of shrug my head at is when the refugee camp is at Morris Brown, like, but it's a dilapidated stadium, so anybody, that could be any place, anywhere. But like, the city shots, the cityscape shots, like, y'all put like zero effort into hiding that this is Atlanta. Like, I see so many signs just like left alone, and I was like, y'all gotta do better. Like, minimal effort to disguise it. But yeah,
that's funny. I thought the music choices were interesting too. Like, they would have really like good music over like the most horrifying images. I was like,
the And I did enjoy that. I like the, like, yeah. We talked about needle drops before when we were talking about, Guardians of the Galaxy. I do like the needle drops in this one because the song choice, a lot of those folk songs that came out, you know, during Vietnam and stuff, a lot of those folk songs are really anti-war songs. And I love their inclusion in this, you know, to still illustrate when all those bad moments are happening, when they're raiding a building or even the White House or when they make it to the military camp, all those, you know, folk songs are playing and everything else is quiet. It really highlights the disconnect because those folk songs are actually really are anti-war songs if you listen to the lyrics.
Yeah.
So I do love that choice in the movie as well. There are good things about this movie. The movie's not all bad, you know.
I thought it was all right.
I think Alex, you know, he could have did better. Like there's stuff there that make a good movie. He just he dropped the ball in a lot of certain areas that really demoralized my experience a bit watching it. So
that's fair.
So after that long diatribe, on to like some news. So of course the big movie trailer that came out a couple days ago is the Joker trailer. I don't speak French and I'm not gonna mess up a subtitle, so I'm just call it Joker 2. What is your reaction or your idea with the movie going forward based on the trailer?
Okay, so like when I heard this was going to be a musical, I was like, what are y'all doing over there? Like I feel like we talked about this too a year ago or whatever. We were like, But when I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, okay, that makes a lot of sense. Like the music is depicting their madness. That's what Folia Doom means, shared madness. Like it's depicting their mental illness. And I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of interesting. So now I'm like, oh wait, is this gonna be like really good? Like I don't know. I got like a little bit chills when I was watching it just because I don't know. And then Joaquin Phoenix is so good in this role. Like he really is just like amazing. But Joaquin Phoenix and Lady Gaga together, like I'm ready for that. Like I felt like whatever chemistry that they had established on that set, I really felt it even in the trailer. I was like, oh, okay, this is going to be some next level. Cause they're both kind of like weirdo method actor-y kind of people. So I'm like, I know they went all in for this role. So I'm excited for that piece, especially at the end when she like draws the little smile with her lipstick and he comes into it with that. I was like, oh, that's so good. That is so good. So like, it looks really cool. And it definitely just fits in with that kind of Gotham just being gross and ugly and terrible, which I love seeing that representation. I think it's great. Just in terms of like setting atmosphere. So I'm really excited for this. I don't know what the hell is going to happen, but I'm ready.
Yeah, I'm sad. Like that scene where they're talking at the prison, she kind of puts the smile on the camera, the pulls focus and he goes over it. Like, online the reaction to it were like, oh my gosh, direct, you don't see no direct doing stuff like this, blah blah blah. And it reminded me of when Todd Phillips was flipping out over his amazement of using Dutch angles, and somebody said reactions in movies like this happen when you're used to eating hamburger and you finally have a steak, like because you've never gone outside your comfort zone to actually see like proper like cinematography, so you get excited and you claim that thing in the moment is the greatest movie you've ever seen because you haven't really gone out of your comfort zone. I don't know how I feel about this movie on one point, like, because it's for the last couple of years, DC has made a concerted effort to distance Harley Quinn from the Joker, because if you're a comic book fan, you know that is a really dangerous, toxic couple. And for the last couple of years, people have emulated them, saying all their relationship goals. And that relationship is actually a very abusive relationship. That's the only thing I kind of don't like about this movie, you know, is bringing back the Joker-Harley Quinn relationship dynamic into vogue again, which they spent years doing. And I also feel like if this movie or this franchise did more to kind of separate itself from the Joker-esque comic-ness of, you know, using the Joker, referencing, you know, Gotham and stuff, you know, it probably would still be a good picture on its own without the cash grab idea of saying this is Joker, this is Harley Quinn. But it is an Elseworld title, so they are going to use those DC characters and tell different unique stories. But I'm interested in it. Not think of it as like a comic book movie. I'm taking it for what it is. Psychological horror thriller with a musical backdrop. I want to see how the concept is executed. I thought the trailer was really artistically and beautifully done. Like you said before, Joaquin is known for knocking these kind of roles out the park. This is Lady Gaga's first time in this kind of role, but she is she's like surprisingly a really good actress. You know, since
she's a great actress,
since she's like left performing as a singer and songwriter. I think the only blemish on her acting resume might be House of Gucci a bit. That was a blemish for everybody though, not just her.
Yeah, the movie wasn't great. I feel like the performance was pretty good though.
But yeah, but other than that, I'm looking forward to this movie coming out in October. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so CinemaCon was I think last week. Mm-hmm. So a lot of big titles, like, and from the big studios have released their trailers. So the audiences who were there got to get a little sneak peek. The biggest news that I heard was the Gladiator 2 stuff, which when I was reading some of the things that were coming out from that movie of like what some of the fight scenes involving certain animals, I was like, what? But apparently the people who saw the trailer were like, this is amazing. We love it. We're so excited. So like, I am ready for Gladiator 2. And I think the weird thing is that like, I'm weirdly interested in like the bigger budget movies that are coming out this year. Maybe because like World Festival season stuff hasn't happened yet. Well, it started with Sundance stuff, but in terms of like the things that you're supposed to be looking out for that's coming out later in the year, the bigger titles are getting me excited. Like, I'm excited for Gladiator. I'm excited for Joker. I'm excited for Twisters. Like, I am really hyped for these movies, which is weird because I didn't think I was going to. Yeah. But like, they look cool. Like, I don't know. The Twisters joint looks insane. I really love Glenn Powell. I think he's fantastic. And I don't know why, but like, there's something about the man. Like, I don't know what it is. But I want to see what he does with this. Like, I'm just excited that like not all of the indie kids, but like some of the indie kids who are used to like doing independent movies or doing like more serious roles. Like, I know Lupita is doing the Quiet Place Day One stuff.
Yeah.
So like, I'm excited to see them do these bigger things, to see what they're gonna, like what's gonna happen. Like Paul Mescal, Daisy Edgar Jones, like they're in these bigger movies, and I'm just like, I'm so ready. Like, I am sat for these films, which is, I guess I'm surprised. I guess I just didn't expect it or something.
Look, Glenn Powell was like the breakout star out of the Maverick movie, and he didn't have that much screen time, which is hilarious. Like, Miles Teller hasn't really been doing anything since that. And then you got Lawrence was, of course, I'm going to call him Lawrence. His name's not Lawrence, but the man was Insecure.
That's not his name. His name is Jay.
I'm going to call him Lawrence. I know him as Lawrence. He's going to be Lawrence forever. No matter what, I'm black. That's his name, Lawrence.
Okay.
You know, from Insecure, and he only really see him on, like, I guess, Nissan commercials or whatever. But Glenn Powell's like, look, I'm going to take all these roles. Like, oh, you fucking, you know, Matthew McConaughey not doing rom-coms anymore. I'll take a rom-com role. Oh, Twister just coming back up. All right, cool. Gerard Butler uses them kind of shits. I'll do that too. I'm going to take all these movies. Y'all going to get tired of seeing me, and I love it.
Me too. I do love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Duality. That's what he's giving. He's giving, I could do anything. I'm ready. Like, I'm ready for these bigger movies. I feel like it's weird because it's like when we look at stuff like Marvel and stuff, it's almost like, well, these people completely missed the point. Like, they're still, you can make a big movie with a big budget, but it has to be good. And again, these movies haven't come out yet, so I don't know what they're going to be like. But, and just in terms of what I'm hearing and from some of the trailers, it feels like maybe some of these other studios have maybe, fingers crossed, gotten the hint that, like, you can do a big budget movie, just make sure that it's good. So, like, and that shouldn't be too difficult, but it's also just, like, studios probably just need to back out of the, like, of the soup, of the conversation, like, get out of here and just let the people work. But it's funny that these, like, titles that we are used to are kind of coming back, and they seem interesting.
The which big is, budgets, they're back.
They're back.
Yeah. That's all we wanted. That's all we wanted for the last 10 years.
I feel like we've been screaming this.
Bring it back with mid-budgets. The mid-budgets are what helped make Hollywood Hollywood, you know, during the downtimes of streaming, because you could see what any movie you wanted. And then it became a point, comic book, you know, $2 million pictures. And that's, so I'm happy the mid-budgets are back. So any other, like, I know the biggest surprise for me over the weekend, though, was, of course, Coachella's going on. It's not just, you know, film festival season. It's, you know, summer music festival. My man's Will Smith performed Men in Black with J Balvin. And, like, that was, like, the shocker of the weekend to me.
What?
Yeah, man. Yeah. Nobody saw that coming. And then the worst part is, I think somebody online said, everybody... I apologize how this sounds, but somebody was like, yeah, no one can make me hate Will Smith. And then the person was like, yeah, the only person who hates Will Smith is his wife. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That was hilarious. But that was probably, like, the biggest thing of the weekend, is Will Smith just coming out of nowhere and performing at Coachella, you know. But yeah.
That is actually very funny. I love that. Honestly, that Will and Jada drama fed me for the last couple of years. So I'm not even, I am not a hater. Like, I was fed. It's not good because it's these people's real lives, but hey. I was fulfilled through that drama. It was good. That's some good, yeah, that's good tea. And Jada, with that book, spilled everything. I was like, I love it. Don't put out a celebrity memoir if you're not going to spill the beans. That's the rule.
That's the rule.
But, that's the rule. And I also saw the Bad Boys for Life trailer. Mm-hmm. Or is that what it's called? The newest one?
It's not Bad Boys. The last one was Bad Boys for Life, and that was Bad Boys 3, which is weird.
So what's this one called?
I don't know, it should have been Bad Boys for Life. It was right there, and they said...
Right.
And they skipped it, you know? But yeah.
Bad Boys Forever? I don't know. But...
Oh, it's called Bad Boys... It's called Bad Boys Ride or Die.
Right.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I had to take a while.
Bad Boys. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I know all y'all are going to be sad for that movie. So I don't know. To me, I honestly, after that Oscar joint, I was just like, I don't care. Like, Will Smith, do your joint. Like, do whatever you want. Like, I was never that pressed over it. But, like, yeah. I feel like we all just need to collectively move on. But. Yeah. That's cool. I forgot that Coachella was happening this weekend, honestly.
Yeah.
But I love it. That's the best thing about Coachella, is the surprise performances. Those are always the best. Okay. So what did we watch this week?
So, of course, after my diatribe about my reaction to Civil War, I kind of need a palate cleanser a bit. So I went to go see Monkey Man. And it's a good movie. I mean, it's not perfect. It's direct. It's Dev Patel's writing and directorial debut, but it's a good first movie. Of course, it's in the world, or stylized in the John Wick kind of style. And I enjoyed it. I hate the fact that minority actors, in order to get the roles they want, they always have to go out on their own to make these, because Dev Patel has gone record saying, oh, he wants to do action movies, he wants to do this, he wants to do rom-coms. And based on being purely a minority, he does not get those job offers. So he had to go and do it himself. And I think it was just going to end up on a streaming platform until Jordan Peele saw it. It's like, no. You're getting a theatrical release. I'm picking it up, and I love that. Like, that's another thing of, you know, other minorities. As much as we like sow division amongst ourselves, we do also have each other's back a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it was good. You liked
it? Yeah, I liked it. Yeah, I love it.
I heard good things about this movie.
Yeah.
What is it? Where is it from? Is it a Paramount movie?
I don't even remember the distributor. It's Monkey Paw. It's a distribution company.
It'll probably be on Universal.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's Universal. It's Universal.
Peacock.
But yeah, it should eventually. Right now, I think it's still in theaters now.
Yeah, but not now.
Eventually, if you like I said, if you're a fan of like John Wick, that kind of world, those kind of pictures, you're gonna love the movie. And if you're a Dev Patel fan, you're gonna love the movie. And I'm a Dev Patel fan, so yeah.
Yeah, you're a stan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really watch much this week. I started watching Sharp Objects, but through, again, proxy. So it seems interesting so far. I haven't seen Amy Adams recently, so I hope she's doing well and getting work. Like, I don't know what she's doing. I think she did like the Enchanted sequel or something like that. Mm-hmm. But that ended up on Disney Plus. I'm not really sure how many people actually watched it. So Amy girl, I hope you're getting money and still working. But this was like one of her best roles from what I've heard. So I'm excited to see like what else happens in it. It seems it's giving like True Detective, but also I think it's from the person who wrote Gone Girl. Mm. So it's giving like female rage.
Good female rage or bad female rage? Because you said you got Good Detective and you got Gone Girl. Gone Girl's kind of like the spectrum of female rage. So, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems crazy right now. Like, the first episode seems like a lot. Like, she's not well. Like, the main character is not well. So, we'll see what happens with that.
You said Amy Adams, and I was like, didn't she? And you're like, you haven't seen her in a while. And I was like, oh, that's because you just divorced, you know, Sacha Baron Cohen. And I was like, in my head, I was like,
no, that's not the same person.
And I was like, no, that's Isla Fisher. They just look alike. That's the thought process I had in my mind when you said her name. But
not good.
But they look alike. It's not my fault. One of their parents got explained to you. I'm sorry.
And also, have you been paying attention to that Sacha Baron Cohen Rebel Wilson drama?
No.
Okay.
Give me, fill me in.
This fill is so in. Irrelevant. Like, since you brought
We're
it
there.
Up.
We're there already. We're there.
Well, I don't know. I guess Rebel Wilson had said a couple years ago that she was working with someone and they were like really unprofessional and trying to like make her do nude scenes and stuff. And then later she revealed that it was Sacha Baron Cohen. And then she wrote a book recently about like how he is terrible to work with. And then all of that happened. And then Isla Fisher filed for divorce. Like, it was just like,
wow.
Uh-oh. Is Sacha Baron's number up? I think it might be, because I know he must have been doing some mess back in the day, especially with that character that he created that felt very like black coded. No.
Oh, Ali G.
Yeah, that one. Tell you, the comedians, your number is up. Like, it's over for y'all. Like, some of them get on my very last nerve. I don't like a lot of comedians. I don't. So whatever is coming for you, coming for me.
Before we wrap, I have one question for you. Mm-hmm. Whose side are you on right now? You on Kendrick and Future, or are you on the Drake side? Where are you at right now?
I will never be on the Drake side ever. Okay,
good.
Never.
Just making sure. I gotta know. If you're on the Drake side, I don't think we could be friends anymore.
First of all, I need to actually one, listen to the song, and then two, look at the drama, because it feels like I read the story, I read the headline, and I didn't actually read what had happened. Kendrick made a song where he just came for everybody.
Kendrick made a song coming for him for coming to Drake and J. Cole. This is after First Person Shooter. Then J. Cole replies, and then like 2 days later at the Dreamville Fest says, oh, never mind, my shit was whack and I couldn't sleep at night. And so then now, you know, Future and Metro Boomin's album has dropped, and it's like line after line of other artists taking shots at Drake, and then Drake replies, and then now Rick Ross has come out with a diss against Drake as well, talking about him having plastic surgery, calling him white boy. It's they in the studio, they rapping these raps, man. It's back.
Yeah, I feel like Drake is just like an easy target because everyone has come for him over the years. Like, everyone has come for him. But I didn't know that it was, well, first of all, Kendrick has come for everyone's life multiple times before. So, like, yeah. I guess I was just wondering, like, why it was this particular instance different.
The thing with Kendrick, though, is when Kendrick rebuttals to people dissing him, that's when all the rappers get in their feelings. And then this happens. It came out last time where he called it basically every New York rapper saying I run New York, that every New York rapper came out with diss tracks against Kendrick. The same thing with this, everybody, like, Kendrick puts other rappers in their feelings, and then everybody has to drop actually some of their best work in that time period. So
yeah, because he's my favorite rapper, so I'm always gonna be on his side, sorry. And I like J. Cole, like, I do. I actually really like his music, but...
Don't apologize, bro.
Kendrick is still superior in my humble opinion, so... Anyway. That's it from us this week. We're gonna stop chatting. Yeah. But we hope that you're all doing well. Make sure to check out all of our social media. Support us if you can. And we will see you guys in the next episode. Goodbye.
Au revoir.